Well, welcome back to HealthLink On Air, produced each week by SUNY Upstate Medical University, making the academic difference in healthcare in the Central New York community. And this is your host, Tricia Torrey, every patient's advocate. And I'm actually joined by my new co-host for this very special edition of HealthLink On Air, the first in our series about difficult decisions in healthcare, Dr. Gregory Eastwood. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning. It's a pleasure to be here.
I'm feeling privileged to be sharing the microphone with you this morning. You are a man who is a legend in Central New York, and we are so pleased that you are interested in doing this series with us because it's so important for our listeners to hear. Alongside us this morning is also one of our favorite and frequent guests, Dr. Sharon Brangman, geriatrician and professor of medicine from SUNY Upstate. Good morning, Dr.
Good morning.
Brangman.
How are you?
And welcome back. Dr. Eastwood, I know some of these topics relating to ethics and difficult decisions are very complex. It seems to me we're trying to balance logic, emotion, questions of right or wrong. So let me ask you to help us understand what we're trying to accomplish with this new regular programming we're building here.
Well, I think everybody faces very difficult decisions, especially with regarding their own health and the health of people they love and friends. And the purpose of this program is to help us all think through some of these decisions and come to what might be workable right answers, at least right answers for people involved.
Because sometimes the right answers for me aren't the same as the right answers for you, are they?
That's right. Let me also emphasize that what we're trying to accomplish here is not some cerebral exercise. We may do a lot of thinking to arrive at the answer, but we're really trying to arrive at something that's workable, doable. I mean, action is implied here.
All right, very good. Well, let's start with some basics of the words ethics. What do we mean by ethics? For instance, what's the difference between ethics and morals?
Well, ethics seeks to identify and guide us in right action and what is the right thing to do. The line between morals and ethics is not a clean one, but I look at it this way. A moral issue is something that we don't have to think too much about. For example, most of us feel that it's wrong to kill someone else. Mm-hmm. But even there, there are adjustments that we sometimes make in our thinking. Societal groups such as governments say it's okay to kill someone in war. We may not agree with that, but that happens. Mm-hmm. Certain states in this country say it's okay to kill someone for doing bad things, for a mm-hmm. bad crime. Mm-hmm. Some people believe it's okay to assist someone to die at the end of life. So those are examples where even moral issues have a little bit of flexibility, at least on a societal basis. An ethical issue, though, is sometimes very complex, and there may be competing goods. Let me give you a specific example. Someone who is nearing the end of life, we might say it's good for someone to live, but that person might be in a great deal of pain, suffering, and we might say, well, maybe it's good for that person just to pass on. So there are two fairly common example, actually, of two competing goods.
Absolutely. And it also strikes me that sometimes we aren't making these decisions for ourselves. Sometimes we have to make them for a loved one, or a loved one has to make them for us. Then you get into issues that aren't just of right or wrong, but even of trust. Mm-hmm. You know, how much do you trust the person that is making decisions on your behalf, or how much does that person trust you? So that does enter into it, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, trust is the currency that I think we value in all interpersonal interactions, whether they're with our loved ones or with people we meet every day and even in a casual fashion. But it's especially important with the people we love. And I think, I don't know whether we're headed in this direction or not, Tricia, but I think that it's very important for people that we love and trust to have honest conversations about some of these things, because we're not always in the capacity, mental capacity, to make these decisions for ourselves.
That's absolutely true. You know, it strikes me, too, that what we're talking about here, when we talk about ethics in relations to medicine in particular, is in a lot of cases we're talking about quality versus quantity. Say the quality of life versus the quantity of life. Mm-hmm. And particularly as we get toward end-of-life questions, whether somebody is young and has been in an accident, or they're older and they're just their bodies are falling apart, the decisions are based on, do we want that person to live a better life for a shorter time, mm-hmm. or a longer life but maybe not the same kind of quality? And that's really where we're going, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. That's where we're going, but of course it's modified a lot by people's own religious beliefs, their own cultural mores, their own standards, their own ethics.
Absolutely. And that really goes back to what we were saying before. What's right for one person isn't necessarily right for the other. What's wrong for one person isn't necessarily what's wrong for the other. What are some examples of these kinds of decisions we're talking about?
Well, we had a very interesting conversation with some people out at Shopping Town Mall a couple weeks ago.
Yes, we
and,
did.
And I proposed some topics for mm-hmm. them, and I'll tell you what those topics were. But I think the really interesting topics was what came back
right.
from them. Some of the things I suggested were what about this era of genetics now? We know the human genome. We know what some of the implications of knowing the human genome are. If you know your genes, and you know there might be some that predispose to illness, do you want other people to know those things? Do you want your insurance company to know, and so on? Actually, there's a law now that's supposed to prevent your insurance company and your employer from misusing that information.
Uh-huh.
There's a whole domain of complementary and alternative medicine. I think almost everyone, even I, sometimes use vitamins that aren't necessarily proven.
Yes, that's right.
But sometimes patients are very reluctant to discuss these things with their doctors.
Mm-hmm.
What about medical mistakes? About 10 years ago, a very distinguished agency called the Institute of Medicine published a book called To Err is Human and claimed that somewhere between 40 and 90,000 people die every year in hospitals because of mistakes. And that has generated a lot of interest. And whether it's 40 or 90,000 or even 10,000, people do die because of mistakes. What about our healthcare system? Many people feel that the healthcare system is not working well. And when we met a couple weeks ago out at Chopping Town, most people in the audience agreed.
Yes, that's true.
What about the ready availability of medical information? You can turn on your computer, access the internet, go to medical blogs or other sources. Is it reliable? One of the interesting things that came up from the people who attended that meeting was who is making the decisions at the insurance company? Most people have
had
frustrations about denial of claims and so on.
Who's being made by non-medical personnel.
Well,
that's
we
right.
think.
Yes.
We don't know who's making those decisions, actually. what about DNR orders and what does that really mean? So on and on and on, lots and lots to talk about.
There are many, many topics. Well, one of the things that's been very interesting to me, we've had a number of your colleagues from the Center for Bioethics and Humanities join us on the show from time to time. And what they've shared with us is that there really is a process that one can go through to make some of these difficult decisions. And mm-hmm. it's not that they make decisions for us, but they actually work with hospital patients and their families to help them ask the right questions, mm-hmm. to help them arrive at some of the right answers. So I thought that was fascinating that it was a service offered to the hospital patients and their families, but I also think it's what I'd like to do this morning to show people how that process takes place.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you shared with me earlier that that is actually something that takes place in other hospitals too.
Well, the Joint Commission that accredits all hospitals in the United States requires each hospital to have an ethics committee. How that is expressed at each hospital is slightly different. At University Hospital here in Syracuse, it includes ethics consults. There are a number of people on call to address issues, clinical issues. These consultations can be called by the physician, the nurse, even students in training, the family members, anybody. And so we think that this provides a real service to all parties, the family, the patient, mm-hmm. and the caregivers.
Absolutely true. And Dr. Brangman, I haven't meant to ignore you this morning. We wanted to get some of the basics in, but this is a scenario you run into frequently, is an end-of-life type issue, particularly, I think, sometimes with people with diminished capacity. Can you share some stories with us?
Well, I take care of patients frequently who have Alzheimer's disease, although that's not the only patient population that I have.
Mm-hmm.
And there can be a whole spectrum of decision-making in somebody who has Alzheimer's disease. In the very mild stages, they're often still able to participate in their medical care.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly as the disease gets worse, and they often lose the ability to have insight and understand situations that are presented to them, we ask family members to assist us, assuming that the family members have had conversations with the patient or they're the ones who know them best and would know what they would want in any given situation.
So Alzheimer's would be one form of diminished capacity. Do you run into others? You must.
Well, anybody who has an illness can sometimes get delirium. And delirium is a temporary state where your brain is really just responding to the illness around you.
Mm-hmm.
And so you get what we call waxing and waning. That can change from hour to hour, where people are alert and then they may be confused. They may be awake and then they could be sleeping. And there could be ongoing decisions that have to be made, and we want to make sure that they are able to make those decisions.
Very good. Well, I want to read a story very quickly, and then we're going to break for a commercial and come back and talk about how we would solve this kind of problem. Does that sound okay with everybody?
That's good.
All right. A woman named Elizabeth had a pacemaker implanted almost 10 years ago. Shortly after the implantation, she was diagnosed with dementia, and these 10 years later, it has progressed to where she has little relationship with the world around her. She no longer recognizes family members, can't feed herself, needs assistance for everything, and spends her days in a wheelchair or in bed. Her pacemaker has been monitored once a month in all these years, and her husband has just been informed by the cardiologist that it's time for the pacemaker to be replaced. It's about to run out of power. Her husband, Sam, is in a quandary. His first instinct was to go along with the doctors and have the pacemaker replaced. But his daughter has raised the question of whether that's the best thing for her mother, and clearly Elizabeth's dementia is too far progressed. She cannot make the decision for herself. So there's diminished capacity, end-of-life questions, and when we come back after the commercial, let's talk about how Sam can help make this decision. Listeners, we do need to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a few moments. This is SUNY Upstate Medical University's HealthLink on Air on 570 WSYR.